Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode number 79, recorded July 22nd, 2010. Cad you dig it. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Twitch. It's time for Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, your weekly dose of geekery that you probably don't find anywhere else these days. Joined once again by Patrick Norton. Patrick, I see the beard is coming in nicely. I hope that the move completes soon.
Yeah, for everybody who was wondering if I'm having a beard competition with Tom, no, it started when the move started. Somewhere around when the move started getting hot and heavy to the new house, I stopped shaving. And at some point in the last few days, I decided I'm not shaving until the move is completed. So my wife says shave or you're not allowed in the house again.
Now, you're not going till everything is unpacked, just till everything is at the new location, right?
Well, I like that thought. Yeah, definitely going to wait till everything's unpacked.
Because that could be like Grizzly Adams then, you know?
That could be like ZZ Top.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I would still be growing mine 5 years later. So let's talk about some hardware news, some interesting types of PC gaming goodness, starting out with StarCraft II. I think we kind of talked about this a little bit last week, but I was curious, were you a big StarCraft fan when the original series kind of came out, Patrick?
I never really played StarCraft. I had a couple of friends of mine who tried to get me into it, and it was right about the time I started. I want to say it's right about the time I started dating my wife.
We blame her. Okay.
You know, so yeah, I like the introduction. If you aren't excited about StarCraft II, then you aren't a real PC gamer. So I guess I'm unmanly and not a real PC gamer, or unwomanly.
But I could see how a lot of people might have missed StarCraft, the first one. Think about it. StarCraft 1 came out in 1998. So we're talking about 12 years ago. One of the guys that works for me, Ken, who does our video and audio editing, he's 19 years old. So he was like 6 or 7 when the game came out. He's like, I never really played the first one because it, you know, when you have 12 years between iterations of your game, you're going to miss a whole generation of people that might have enjoyed it.
Two thoughts. One, I was launching ZDTV when this came out, so I was working 80 hours a week. Two,
yeah.
Why did they take 12 years between versions of this game? That's just bizarre.
Yeah, I have.
That's like Serious Sam bizarre.
I have no idea for that, because when you really look at the screenshots and gameplay from StarCraft II, it is not different at all, basically, from the original StarCraft. They've upgraded, you know, there are new units, but if you've played a real-time strategy game, you're going to know exactly what the gameplay is like. Resource mining, defense building, army building, go have a battle, you know?
Right.
They've added some new things here and there, but the gameplay is essentially the same. The viewpoint is essentially the same. It's all 3D instead of 2D, but a lot of people are complaining that even though it's 3D, because you can't zoom out any further. Like if you've ever played Supreme Commander 2 or some other newer RTS games, you have the ability to like zoom out and see the entire landscape at one time if you want to. And then you can zoom in on each individual character if you want to as well. And because StarCraft is kind of built for, they really have come out and said that they're targeting this towards competition, really. So they don't want, they're really kind of strung up on getting things so that they're very balanced from a multiplayer perspective. They don't want me to be able to have an advantage because I have a 30-inch monitor when I'm playing a guy with a 22-inch monitor. So they're not letting us see any more or anything like that.
I was going to say, it's almost like if they wanted to be people to be able to play it on something like an iPad or a small notebook along with a desktop.
Yeah.
I'm still just like 12 years.
Yeah, 12 years is a long time. And it's not like people haven't been asking for it for at least a decade. No, you know, that's kind of how Blizzard operates. That's their MO, right? And how long has it been since Diablo 2 came out? And we're going to get Diablo 3 next year. That's just...
I vaguely remember Diablo 2.
Yeah, I never was a big Diablo fan, but I have several friends that have already kind of, you know, they're like, I wonder if I should book 2 weeks of vacation when Diablo 3 comes out type of deal, you know. So hopefully not too many of us are actually doing that. What's interesting about StarCraft 2 from a hardware standpoint is it's interesting you mentioned, you know, the ability to play it on lower end hardware, very different types of devices, is that it's very much targeted for that market. So Blizzard tends to do day one PC and Mac releases. This is going to be one of those as well. Mm-hmm. And not to diss on the Mac a whole lot, when one of your target audiences for your 3D game is the Mac, you kind of have to go to a slightly lower common denominator than you would if you were targeting PC gamers. Because
that was really diplomatic.
I thought
basically
so.
What you're
Thank
saying
you.
Is gaming on the Mac is sucks compared to programming yes. 3D gaming on Windows.
Correct.
Ergo, you need to be a little more. You're going for the lowest common denominator. I'm just, before you kind of move forward on this, is there any advantage to higher frame rates in StarCraft 2? I don't remember high frame rates being particularly useful for having an advantage in this game.
So I would say in general with RTS games, once you hit in any game, really, once you hit 60 frames per second, you're good. Mm-hmm. I would say in an RTS game, you could probably even drop below that, maybe to 30 or 40, depending on your own kind of personal preferences. But you're right. Unless you're one of those crazy super keyboard shortcut, fast-paced gamers with StarCraft or other RTS games, if you're a more casual, laid-back guy, and then frame rates are not going to be a huge deal. But obviously, what you can test for is, can this card play it at those resolutions, or can you turn on different image quality settings and that kind of stuff for that, which is, you know, I would agree with you. It's not, performance isn't as important with StarCraft 2 as it would be with Modern Warfare 2. Fair deal.
Yeah.
Which turns out to be a plus, because in terms of hardware, StarCraft 2 plays very well on a large array of graphics cards. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think your bottom of the line graphics card is what's still in my $500 PC at this point.
The 4850 or the GTX 260?
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah. We could have gone back forever, but limits on time, limits on resources for us testing wise. But, all I did was I opened up StarCraft 2, the beta, turned on every image quality setting up to its maximum, because I thought, okay, let's just go see what this can do. And, you know, last week we talked about the GTX 460s and these new $200 graphics cards from NVIDIA that are really kind of the first Fermi card that is a good performance per watt. It's a good performance per dollar in comparison to AMD's options. This card was able to run 19x12 resolutions, 4xAA without a problem, all the image quality settings maxed out. It was even able to run 30-inch monitors, 2560x1600 resolution without anti-aliasing on, and we didn't have any hiccups at all with this. And you can go back, like you were saying, we went back another generation of cards. We tested the Radeon 4850, which was kind of like, when it came out, it was like a $250 graphics card, and then the GTX 260 in a similar price point, but now we're talking about 2 years later. Those cards still were able to play the game very,
just
very
not
well.
Well,
I mean, they could play it at 19. They could play it at 19x12 with all the image quality settings turned on.
I guess I was looking at like the 50 frames per second frame rate and reconciling that with you saying like once you've hit 6. Okay, partially because all the high end cards are so much faster than the 4850. It looked particularly slow by comparison.
Right, and that's kind of the caveat there is, while the GTX 480. This $450 plus card, it maxes out at like 110 frames a second. But it's really, we're hitting a CPU limit with the game. The game wasn't, I feel like I'm dogging on the Blizzard guys. Maybe I am a little. It's not a well-written game in terms of multi-threaded performance boosting. There's, when you're looking at the performance of the CPU while playing it, there's really one thread pegged at you know, 80 to 90 to 100%, and then maybe one other one at, in the 30 range, right? So it's not really built for quad core parts or triple core parts or quad core hyper threaded CPUs or anything like that. It's made to work at its best on single core dual thread systems, kind of like what we, you know, have with Macs, lower MPCs and all that kind of stuff as well. So I definitely feel like they were targeting specific groups of hardware, whether
right.
it be
well, notebooks. It's very World of Warcraft, like anybody with,
yes,
you know, they basically want the largest possible pool of players to have the best possible experience on this.
Correct. And there's a lot of benefit to them for that, is they can sell the game to more people. When you make a game like Crysis and you say, yeah, you really need to have 4 gigs of memory and a GTX 280, which at the time was really high-end hardware or whatever, then you're limiting your sales base. And I think when you look at the financial results from Crysis and Crytek, and that for that reasoning, they have decided to go the route of consoles and make their next upcoming titles kind of a multi-release on all those areas. But
I don't know. Maybe they will release on consoles. That would actually be really funny.
Yeah. The long story is, or the short story is, chances are what you have will play it. You might not be able to turn up the image quality settings to ultra, but you're not going to see a huge advantage for it. The only other final thing I'll say is StarCraft II is being released without anti-aliasing support in the game, which is really kind of odd for a game released in 2010.
Yeah, that just seems bizarre to me. I mean, you know, is this something you might add later on, or is it just they didn't even bother?
They haven't commented on that they would introduce it later on, which is odd because they did say they were going to add support for NVIDIA's 3D Vision technology on it, which could be kind of cool on an RTS. But they didn't say, they said they're going to look into it, right? Which is still kind of weird, because it's something you can turn on or off. It's not really going to affect performance. You could default it off and allow people to enable it if you want. NVIDIA spent a lot of time with their driver and have figured out a way to kind of hack anti-aliasing support into the game. And it does make a pretty big difference in terms of visuals. If you go to the article at PC Perspective, PCPer.com, you can see I've kind of got screenshots of one with anti-aliasing, one without, and, you know, kind of zoom in and show you where these differences are. And it's fairly noticeable. The problem is when you don't have AA enabled through the game engine itself, it has a much larger performance hit on the game. So we're seeing like 50% drops in performance with it. But because the game is not real hard on hardware, that sometimes you can still get away with turning on AA, even with, you know, the $200 graphics cards, and get top level, you know, performance and frame rates that you need to play the game. So if you're excited about StarCraft II, I guess the time takeaway is chances are your hardware will play it. You don't have to worry about going out and buying new hardware. Bad news for the hardware guys, good news for the consumers and Blizzard.
Cool.
One other piece of kind of strictly hardware news I guess I will touch on is AMD Llano. Llano being a Fusion APU, Accelerated Processor Unit. This is the new acronym AMD has created for their combined CPU-GPU hybrid parts that will be coming out. Well, now they're going to be coming out in the first half of 2011. They were several months ago, they had said, oh, we're moving the schedule ahead. We're going to come out in Q4 of 2010. We've got lots of partners that want these designs. We're going to get them in their hands early and make sure they're sampling and then being able to, you know, get mass production before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. This week, we now heard that is not going to happen anymore. We're moving back to the original schedule, where sometime in the first half of 2011, we will see this part out. And it's disappointing, because if you're a fan of AMD, and if you're not a fan of AMD, you're a fan of competition, you don't want to see the little guy having these types of problems. You don't want to see the little guy having product delays and process issues and this kind of stuff, while Intel is still very confident with the release of their Sandy Bridge part, probably at the end of this year, that will be a CPU, GPU, one monolithic die processor type of thing. And they, you know, we have the Intel developer forum in September out there where you are in San Francisco, and you know they have made no qualms about that they're going to show it, they're going to demo it, and they're going to show performance numbers, and AMD is now kind of having to step back a little bit on it. I've had a lot of questions as people say, well, why would they move it forward and then in a very close window move it back? It's very kind of confusing as to why they would. You know, it's almost like they felt very confident about where the process was, where the technology was, and then all of a sudden something happened. It really comes down to, if you've heard of the TikTok release that Intel publicizes and talks about a lot,
right?
On how they release processors, they do the tick is a new process change. They move from 45 nanometer to 32 nanometer. And then the talk is within that same process technology, you change architecture. So you have a 32 nanometer core, and then you move to a 32 nanometer core with changes, and then the next time you shrink that core down to the next size, and that kind of limits risk. It allows you to focus your engineers to focus on one thing at a time over that one. AMD has traditionally followed that same very similar pattern, going from 90 to 65 and 65 to 45, but they're with this part they are going a completely new architecture, like not even a modest modification to it, but a completely new design and architecture, and moving from 45 to 32 nanometer process in the same step. And I think that is probably the result, or that is probably the reason for the slight delay in these parts. So other than that, we still hope to see, you know, sampling early in the first half of 2011, not late in the first half of 2011, if at all possible. Again, rooting, even if you don't root for the little guy, you got to root for competition. So Intel continues to have a reason to release newer, faster parts for lower prices.
Speaking of lower and lower prices.
Yes, exactly.
Something I thought was interesting that came up in the news today is Foxconn, right? A lot of people don't really know Foxconn exists or didn't until the last 6 months or year or so, when there were a lot of troubles coming up around iPods and iPhone releases and worker suicides and a guy jumping out a window, I believe, after security from Foxconn pressured him about missing samples. But it's interesting that Foxconn is actually going to be raising prices. Foxconn is probably the largest consumer electronics manufacturer in the world. They make, obviously, I want to say iPhones, iPods, Mac Minis, probably the notebooks. They make or have made products for HP, Dell, Nokia. They've made Intel motherboards. It's a company about, I want to say, 800,000 people, give or take. They currently do the Mac Mini, the iPod, the iPad, the iPhone for Apple, Intel branded motherboards. That's the one I forgot. The PlayStation 2, the PlayStation 3, the Wii, the Xbox 360, cellular phones for Motorola and Nokia, the Amazon Kindle, and Cisco networking equipment, which is what most of our packets travel on, or a shocking percentage of packets on the internet. It's a lot of stuff. It's an absolutely huge company. You know, it's a multinational group. I want to say it started in Taiwan. They do most of their production in China. And so the AP is reporting, and I think Engadget was talking about it too, is that they are going to hike the prices to pay for the increased labor costs in China. So when everybody's sitting down and they're feeling bad about their job and what they make, I want you to remember that Foxconn's going to change. Probably it's going to raise the prices of things like iPods and iPads, or maybe cut into Apple's profits or Dell's profits or HP's profits or Intel or whoever is currently buying products from them. They doubled the salaries of the basic worker pay for Chinese workers to $293 a month.
You know, so, you say doubling their wages, you think, wow, that's going to be
the basic worker pay at Foxconn, the entry level, I guess, is $293 a month. So, you know, it's if you're, you know, if you're wondering what's going on, if prices start going up towards later this year, Foxconn starting to pay wages a little higher could be no small part of that. I mean, we're talking about a company that has like a single plant with 300,000 workers in Shenzhen, China. So it's a pretty crazy concept, the idea. All this stuff we buy, part of the reason it's so cheap, even if you think you're paying a lot of money, is because people make almost no money assembling it in China, which is something to think about when you're buying toys.
So yes. It does put a lot of things in perspective when you can double their wages to $293 a month. Hopefully that will cut down a lot of their personnel issues. And I'm sure a lot of this, Foxconn as a company probably didn't want to do that. Obviously, it's going to cut into their profits and that kind of thing. But probably with all the, I think in particular Apple, you named off so many different products that of Apple's that were made there, almost basically all of them. They've gotten so much press over the issues that Foxconn has had with the suicides and all this other kind of stuff. I'm sure Apple, Steve Jobs had a nice little bug in their ear and said, why don't you maybe do something to prevent these from happening anymore? So,
or do something to prevent an outbreak of organized labor. That could be another motivation for that. So yes. The articles are actually saying they don't know whether or not the charges are going to be pushed through to retail pricing. But it'd be something to think about between now and Black Friday later this year. So
very good. Let's take a quick break here to thank the sponsor of today's episode of This Week in Computer Hardware, Audible.com. Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For listeners of This Week in Computer Hardware, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out the service. Now, they're asking us for a recommendation of an audiobook that we might point to. And I'm trying to think. I know somebody's going to be able to help me in the chat room with this. Because when you were talking about this one company that manufactured all of these numerous parts, there was a book that came out, an audiobook. I know it was on Audible. I think this is where I heard of it originally. It was on another network show where one networking company in China it made all these chips for all the networking technology, and they used that to create a backdoor in every router and every switch that was they ever manufactured, and that they were able to access it at their will. Now I can't remember the name of the title here. Do you have another recommendation, perhaps, for my lack of title or author for this? I know the chat room is going to know what it is. It's I don't know. Very popular recently.
Oh, you know, it's not coming to me. I'm trying to remember, actually. You got me looking up here on Amazon. I've been reading this amazing biography of William Randolph Hearst. Okay. And me leaning over to try to read the Amazon page is why my face keeps disappearing over there.
It's all right. It happens.
That, and if I could actually type William Randolph Hearst without slipping. The Chief, The Life of William Randolph Hearst by David Nassau.
Okay.
Don't know if there's an audiobook for that. Can you check? I don't have my Audible account.
I think it is on here. Yeah. I'm looking through. I see that on there. So pretty good so far.
Pretty exciting. William Randolph Hearst is basically inherited a fortune and decided he was going to be a newspaper man, and spent a considerable amount of the fortune before he inherited it and after it building an incredible media empire. And also actually changing the way we consume news and the way newspapers are created. It was him and Joseph Pulitzer, the fellow that started the New York Times. And it's kind of a fascinating look also because San Simeon is a few hours south of here on the California coast, which is this, you know, cottage. It's kind of hard to explain. It started out as a little place to stay down on the kind of like down on the coast south of San Francisco to take downtime, and turned into this zillion room mansion filled with the most incredible antiques imported from Europe and elsewhere. But I love biographies. Love John Adams biography is another one that's absolutely a fantastic read.
Very cool. Well, you can, if you go to audiblepodcast.com/twitch, you can look through any of those 75,000 titles. They've got anything from, you know, fiction and history to classics, comedy, drama, poetry, business books. If you need to catch up on some stuff for work, a good way to do it is through Audible, where you can listen, but you can't always read. Maybe you can even listen while you're at work, if you have a job that allows that kind of flexibility as well. You can type and do whatever you need to do while listening to audiobooks. that URL again to get your free, completely free, try the service out. You get to keep the book whether or not you decide to stay with Audible, but I think you're going to like their service. I believe they have, the Android application is out now. Is that correct? I think I heard Leo say that a couple of weeks ago for Audible. So you can just kind of manage your lists. I know you can listen to it on Android. You can listen to the books on iPhone, iPad, of course, then of all that kind of stuff. So you can pretty much put it anywhere you need to be. That URL again is audiblepodcast.com/Twitch, TWICH. We thank them for their support. Speaking of Android, the Droid X came out. And I have a horse in this race because in the description for this story, you mentioned it's like the Evo, but battery life that doesn't suck.
Yeah. Mauricio Balvanaro, who's one of the contributors to App Judgment and just started a show here at Revision 3 called Unboxing Porn. The first unboxing porn is unboxing the Droid X, and he got to use it for a few days and did a review of it on Texilla, the Texilla that came out this afternoon. And there's, I know there's an Audible beta for Android, by the way. I don't think it's gone final.
Okay.
I could be wrong about that. It should be pretty close to being final at this point. So he was really impressed with the Droid X. He's actually, you know, becoming, he's been kind of hot and cold on the Android OS. But the Droid X, once you get past the fact that it is huge, he got pretty excited about the battery life, which was lasting in by his kind of standards as he, you know, charges it and uses it. He was getting like 2 days of use out of it compared to a single day of use out of the Evo. Is that a Droid X?
This is an Evo here. Okay. So it's if I can actually put it in the frame. I mean, this is kind of like your standard graphics card size. I don't know. I didn't have anything else here of better reference. So I mean, you kind of get an idea of how big these phones are. And the Droid X is actually a little bit bigger.
Yeah,
than the Evo. So,
if you put it in the hands of somebody, if you give it to somebody with small hands, it looks like an iPad or a very small iPad. It looks huge. It's a really nice phone. Motorola did a really good job. Motorola, who by the way got primarily bought by Nokia this week. Yeah, Nokia. You know, things like there's three microphones built into it, one for noise cancellation, one for the front, and then one for the actual facing for the HD video camera, so it has a decent source. It's a really nice piece of hardware. If I were thinking about going to Android, that's given the battery life issues people have been having with the Evo, I would be taking a really serious look at the Droid X. It's a really nice piece of hardware. I'm going to sneeze, so.
Okay, you do that. My issue is with this is I've had the Evo since it came out, never really had any battery issues. Now, I did want to mention something else. I didn't put it in the list here, but I felt like I should. So this is my Evo. It's got some fingerprints on it, on its screen protector. But take a look at it that way now. You see something different? It has this, I got this new battery for it that kind of makes it like an even bigger phone because now it's kind of fat as well as tall.
It looks like one of the shuttles off of the Enterprise now.
Yeah. This is not a battery I plan on using the whole time, but I wanted to test it out. So the default battery in the phone is 1,500 milliamp hours. This one is 3,500 milliamp hours. And obviously it sticks up high enough out of it that they had to make a new back for it. But, you know, you can still use the kickstand, still use the camera and all that kind of stuff. And then what else is interesting here is, I don't know, well, when I hit the button on the phone here, you'll see it says, please connect your charger. What's interesting is that has been coming up for about 4 hours. It's been telling me that I'm almost dead on my battery for about 4 hours. So it's done pretty good. It's been on for 35 hours, maybe on 37 since it's been plugged into anything.
So maybe that battery pack on the Droid would last 72 hours.
Probably. But this is the battery I'll use when I go to CES and all those kinds of things where I have to have, you know, 18 plus hours of battery life, no questions asked type of thing. But I, even with the standard 1500 milliamp hour battery, I was able to use it. But, you know, the Droid X, the Evo, there's the Windows based one on T-Mobile, the HD2, and I know the HD3 is coming out. I think that's going to be, I think that might have Froyo on it or something like that when it comes out. These huge screen phones, I'm curious, are you a fan of phones this big, or is the iPhone the perfect size for you, and anything bigger than that's kind of, you know, uncomfortable or unwieldy to hold?
You know, I think it's going to be when I can't get the phone into my back pocket, or I can't, what Mauricio refers to is when you can't actually reach the far side of the screen with your thumb, I think that's where it's going to start to be problematic for me. Mm-hmm. Cause it's a bad habit. I shouldn't do it, but I still put my phone in my back pocket all the time. I think when it gets to the point where I can't fit it in my back pocket, or I actually notice the weight of it in my pocket, that's going to be the point where I start going, are you kidding me? On the flip side, the power on the phones is getting the phones are getting so powerful. And you know what I mean? If you're thinking about this is really ridiculous when you think about it, the 720p video camera, like, you know, 5 or 8 megapixel, digital cameras, the ability to play video, the ability through these bizarre little mini HDMI ports, assuming anybody ever gives you the cable. In theory, more on the Evo side. In reality, I think more on the Droid X, or it's kind of hard to tell. Because they often ship the test units without the cables, you need to test them. So the idea that you can use, you can feed HD video off of the phone to your HD TV, which, you know, if you're lucky enough to stay in the business suites, every so often I'm in a business suite with an HD TV, so you can plug in your remote content. You know, my running joke was if they just allow me to have a Bluetooth keyboard for my iPhone, I could actually do a lot of my work on my iPhone. And so they refuse to let you use a keyboard with your iPhone, but hey, at least you can use it with the iPad. So I think it's gonna be interesting, right? The Dell Streak's coming out. That's got a 5-inch screen Android operating system. That's coming out very soon, for by all accounts. Windows Phone OS 7.
Windows Phone Series 7.
I gotta say, the 6.5, Windows 6.5 for mobile is one of the worst mobile phone experiences I've ever had. Period. Yeah. Actually, I think about it, it is the single worst experience I've had with a mobile phone. The new interface on the Windows 7 for the phone, it looks pretty fantastic. They're bringing the Zoom interface in for your media devices, which I think is an incredibly smart thing for Microsoft to do. And actually, what's kind of funny is I think Microsoft made like $4.5 billion last quarter, and they're turning around and they're promising a Windows 7 phone to every single employee. So you're talking about 90,000 Windows phones. So that's a pretty nice chunk. That's a pretty nice chunk of phones to seed an entire market with, in terms of creating demand for accessories, or at least making it look like a whole lot of people are out there using them.
Imagine if they'd given a kin to every Microsoft employee.
I feel bad for the kin. The kin, you know, some people told me the kin actually wasn't a bad phone. It was just, it had bad plans, and then it just internally got crushed at Microsoft. Yeah. There's some, you know, if you're curious about sort of internal politics at Microsoft, just do a search online for kin and death of, and you start to get some interesting stories around that one.
Now, there's something you mentioned here in our show notes about a sub $1,000 3D plasma from Samsung, but you say there's a catch. So I was, you know, I read it and I was like excited because I'm kind of interested in the 3D TV, but I really don't want to pay $2,500 for a new TV that I'm not sure will be a gimmick feature in a couple of years. So
I think you're worried is about 3D HDTV being a gimmick are pretty well founded. A buddy of mine over at Engadget HD, Ben Drabo over at Engadget HD, he says the killer application for 3D HDTV is actually sports, because he was kind of not really into the whole idea. Because I've seen Cloudy with Meatballs in 3D. You know, and I'm sitting there looking at it, and all I could think is, this really reminds me of those picture books you used to get with a kid with the sort of Fresnel lens-based 3D thing, and you'd rock the thing back and forth, and you know, it would look like the tree, but it really looks like a bunch of flat cutouts in foreground and background. And there's certainly a sense of depth, but there's no real sense of life to it. I haven't seen a lot of the films, and like the actual live-action films in 3D, but everybody tells me the real killer application is going to be sports, and that it's once you've, it's kind of like, you know, it's enveloping, it's an encompassing, it doesn't sort of break down the fourth wall and distract you. In any case, $1,600 right now, maybe a little bit less for a decent 3D HDTV. Up to $2,500 to $5,000 at the high end. It's a checkbox feature, right? It's gotten to the point where the entire market is so wrapped around the idea of 3D HDTVs. By this time next year, I don't think there'll be unless there's a spectacular crash and burn around the 3D HDTV technology. It's going to be in like every 3D HD, or every HDTV sold will be 3D HDTV. It doesn't really impact 2D, except it's additional work to create the 3D technology that's implemented using the same sort of transistors or phosphors on the screen, right? For plasmas, okay. They have to really, it's really interesting for plasma HDTVs to do 3D TVs, they have to create a phosphor with a very fast decay rate because they have to change the pixels so quickly because you're essentially 240 hertz in like two cycles. 480 hertz ends up creating like an on a black and off a black, or excuse me, an on a black and on a black, and basically shuttering for the lenses. In any case, so basically they have to have very fast decay rates because they're moving the images, basically doing moving the images across the screen so fast and doing the black inserts so you get the motion. I'm babbling on and on about this because they're going to push this down a little bit towards Christmas this year, absolutely by Christmas next year, as HDTV prices continue to drop and they start hitting up the sort of the maximum reasonably priced piece of LCD or plasma flat panel glass they can drop. It's going to be everywhere. So by next year, it's going to be super cheap to do 3D HDTV. The catch on this plasma from Samsung, it's good-looking plasma, but it's one, it's 720p, and two, they're not putting any glasses in the box. So your $1,000 plasma is going to require a $160 pair of glasses plus a compatible 3D Blu-ray player or PS3 to actually do 3D movies. So that said, so $1,600 is still the typical entry point for a 3D HDTV. Robert Herron talks about this a bunch on the HD Nation that's coming out on Monday. It's going to be interesting. The plasma technology is actually pretty interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see how low they push 3D TV or 3D HDTVs down between now and Christmas. I think there's going to be a monster push.
I hope so.
For Black Friday.
Because it's one of those things, I'm just, everybody that knows me knows that I'm the guy that will go out and buy all the gadgets, right? And I've been asked by friends and family several times, it's like, well, you probably have a 3D TV, don't you? And I'm like, well, actually, no, I don't. It's because, you know, I go to Best Buy or I'll go wherever, and it's like, well, 50-inch is going to cost me $2,500. And I'm just like, nah, I don't really watch that much TV now. I don't have DirecTV, so I wouldn't be able to get ESPN 3D to do the sports as kind of, you know, the killer app that you're talking about there.
It's super bleeding edge right now. There's like four Blu-ray titles that do 3D. There's a fistful of games out there. There's the 24-hour DirecTV channel, which is, let's just say it's not exactly jam-packed full of content. There's occasional gusts of 3D HDTV from some of the cable networks. Right. And you know, you need a pair of glasses for everybody sitting in the room. There's a really good Penny Arcade cartoon where they're basically like, you know, Gabe and the other guy are sitting in the couch like, this is amazing. When is Prawn coming to this format? And the girls are sitting there trying not to vomit because they're seeing the weird stuttery images. You know, and the guys are on the couch like, yeah, it looks really good with glasses. You should get some. So, you know, if you have a decent sized family, having glasses for everybody is going to get pricey.
Imagine trying to have a Super Bowl party or something like that. You know, I mean, if you have 15 or 20 people over for a Super Bowl party, I don't want to go down that route. So
it's all about $1,000 Optima, $1,000 1080p projectors and a white wall.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Now, we also have listed here the HP slate being dead for consumers. Hey, you never know, right? But it might come out for businesses. Anything else to add other than that? I mean, we kind of saw other news was that the Asus was dropping Windows from their E-pad, and instead they were going to be using Android instead of Windows 7 embedded. So it seems like there's a lot of changes kind of going on in the iPad competitor market of which
there are close to. The big thing, right, at CES, Steve Ballmer holds up this thing. It's a slate, you know, and everybody's like, oh, my goodness, it's a slate. You know, that thing that's coming from Apple that Apple won't talk about has a competitor. And, yeah, you know, basically they dropped it from the consumer market. They're going straight for a commercial, like vertical integration, hospitals, insurance people, stuff like that. It seems like maybe they're going to move, you know, all the Windows Phone OS 7 will be the next challenge to Android and iPhone. But
I still am curious about what HP will do with Palm in terms of a tablet device, because I had a Palm Pre for over a year. I liked the Palm OS or Web OS, the phone and whatever had some problems, but I'd like to see that. You know, now that I see how Android acts on a 4.3-inch screen, I'm curious how it'll work on a 7-inch screen or an 8-inch screen and that kind of stuff, too. So, I think Apple has proven that the tablets can be a success. I do kind of wonder if maybe the iPad hype has wound down enough that everyone else is kind of like, maybe that smallish market is saturated and people kind of realize that maybe they're not using them as much as they thought they were going to or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, everybody I know with an iPad either uses it constantly or wants to know how to get their money back. And I'd say it's like 10 to 1 on using it constantly to wanting their money back. I think partially it's like people are making a whole lot of netbooks, and I think they're sitting on a whole lot of netbook inventory right now or maybe just not looking at profits where they were. And I think the idea, it's like, you know, Apple's already sold 3.5 million plus iPads at this point. The confirmed number is like 3.3, but you know, that was like a week ago, so they probably sold several hundred thousand since then. that's just got to be a brutal foot race to want to walk into.
Sure.
You know, especially I didn't get a chance to handle one of the slates. I'm sure it's a nice piece of hardware, but you know, that's just, I can't imagine wanting to walk into that market at this point. That just looks like a really difficult fight.
Agreed. Agreed. Let's see. We got a couple of more things before we get into our Twitter questions this week. One, actually, I made a comment on Twitter, and I have one of our Twitter questions is actually one of the answers here. I was complaining about Adobe, which many people do fairly frequently.
Specifically
this time, I was complaining about the fact that when I installed Windows 7 on something, I needed to run a Flash application, went to go download it, and the default action from Adobe is for you to download the Adobe Download Manager, Adobe DLM. They don't ever call it the Download Manager. They call it Adobe DLM. And if you're not paying attention, it comes up as an ActiveX control in Internet Explorer, which is the only, browser on a fresh Windows 7 installation. So that's what I'm using, just trying to get things done quickly. And I got aggravated because I didn't want to put Download Manager on it. And I was looking around for the link of where can I just download? Where's the link for? It's like, if you don't want this, please just click here. And I was never given that option anywhere for this. Complained about it on Twitter, and we had several people first of all, some people found the direct link on Adobe's site and sent me links for that, but that's not very helpful as they change versions and files and that kind of stuff. Several people pointed me to FileHippo or Nynite.com. Nynite.com I have used a lot and really do like. And one of the options there is, have you ever used Nynite, Patrick?
Yeah, it's actually a fantastic. Basically, it's the most perfect slipstreaming application for Windows ever invented. Yes. So you can basically take the operating system, and I want this part's installed and this part's not installed, and I want to add in these downloads, and it creates a single disk, and it's nice.
And I'd never heard of FileHippo.com until people started pointing me to that as well, but I don't know exactly what else they do, but I had several people send me links to the FileHippo.com download for the Adobe Flash installer without having to go through the download manager. So I just wanted to bring that up as a complaint, and then that was one of our kind of Twitter answers / Twitter questions. Also, I did want to we used to do contests on Twitch quite a bit, hadn't done one in a while. And I came across quite a few copies or CD keys, Steam keys for Just Cause 2, which is a rather new PC game. It came out this year. NVIDIA gave me, I think, 15 copies of it. We gave 10 away on our podcast, give away 5 more here. We're going to make things real simple. If you want a free Steam key for Just Cause 2, all you have to do is send an email to ryan@twit.tv, put in the subject Just Cause 2 or something like that, and we'll pick 5 random people next week and hand out some copies of some games. So that should be fun. Worth a look, especially for free, right? You know,
free's good. I like free. Your mailbox is probably flooding right now.
Right now, yes. I'm sure if I were to log into somewhere, I would see that. So that's good. That's the point. We want interaction. We want people excited about watching the show. Let's jump into our Twitter questions for this week. The first one comes from Rectorna. Asks, what is the best $100 graphics card for CAT video work? I assume they meant CAD. I can't think of what else it would be. CAT/video work. I'm thinking CAD/video work.
CAD works for me.
I mean, T and D maybe aren't as close on the keyboard as I was kind of hoping they would be. But it could be CAR or CAF or CAG. That doesn't really work either.
Catalog video work?
For $100, if you're doing video work, if he's actually doing CAD, it's a totally different type of scenario because you're going to look at Fire Pro or Quadro cards. They do make lower end. I know AMD came out with a Fire Pro V3800, which is a $120 professional level graphics card. And quickly to kind of summarize this, a professional graphics card is really almost identical to a consumer enthusiast graphics card, with the exceptions of maybe you get more frame buffer. Like they sell Quadro cards that have 2.5 gigs of memory on them, as opposed to 1 or 1.5 or 1.25 or whatever that is. You get different driver support. The drivers are tweaked a little bit differently. They're, you know, meant for applications like AutoCAD and 3D Studio Max and Maya and all these other different professional level CAD and design and 3D modeling applications, which we have running back here actually specifically today. And then for video work, if he's looking for GPU accelerated video work, then you need to kind of, if you're working with Adobe, the Quadro line is doing that, but nothing close to $100. $500.
It's kind of like, you know, if you can actually prove that you have some element of the video program you're using that is accelerated by a graphics card, then it's worth spending some money. If you're in a low-end graphics, low-end video editing package, or inexpensive video editing package, you're not going to get a lot of the 3D acceleration, the GPU, the cool guy GPU stuff that will accelerate encoding in a lot of cases, or certain filters and stuff. If that's not enabled in your editing package of choice, there's not a whole lot of point in spending a lot of money on a graphics card for video editing.
You just need something.
You need something. Yeah, you need, you know, at that point, it's like whatever the cheapest, DX10, DX11 card that you can get your hands on and works fine. I always thought it was fascinating that, like, the Fire, or not always, I just was looking and found it fascinating that the ATI Fire Pro cards are doing a 30-bit display pipeline and support for high dynamic range output, which is crazy when you're looking about, like, you know, they're claiming like a gamma of like a billion colors versus like 17 million colors for a consumer 24-bit graphics card.
I mean, you have to have a very particular display for that to be useful. It's nice to have that option.
That's the thing, like storing geometry inside the card without having it pushed back to the CPU to calculate changes. If you've never seen like a CAD program, some of the most insane stuff where they're designing, one of the most insane things I ever saw was essentially like a jack-up oil rig. And it was pretty fascinating because not only was it billions of polygons inside of this thing, but it also did real-time tracking. Like every time they added another girder, it basically tracked the parts cost and the parts count. So it would be like another piece of steel and like, you know, 8 more bolts to tie it into it. So there's some crazy stuff going on with some of the high-end CAD packages that people use to create stuff.
Agreed.
But yeah, storing geometry inside the car.
What's our next question over here?
Dude, I'm still on the... You're like, I'm bored.
Oh, no, I thought maybe we got a timing glitch here. I thought there was a pause. So.
All right. It's all right. I'm over my obsession with high-end graphics cards now. JS Beam, how old should a computer be before it needs to be replaced or upgraded? There's two ways to look at this. There's a whole range of ways to look at this. As soon as something faster comes out, which means like every 2 weeks, as soon as you start losing your competitive advantage in gaming, or the next step down would be when it can't run an operating system or an application you want, or it won't run an application as fast as your buddies can, or at the bottom of the list when you can no longer open up a browser, a Word document, or at the very bottom of the list when it's actually dead.
Yeah, it's a really personal question, right? It depends on what your finances are, what your I need to have the latest, greatest urges are, right? You know, I mean, you talked about at the beginning of the show that you had a $500 gaming PC that you built. When was it? 2 years ago?
Well, I guess one that I built 2 years ago, the one before that lasted, I used for 5 years. And
that's a long time.
With one graphics card upgrade and one hard drive upgrade, I basically used the computer for 5 years. I don't think I'd try to run Windows 7 on it, but it's still halfly running Windows XP. I have I still have it stored under my bench because I spent too much time playing with it. But it was basically a computer I dedicated to be an MP3 player.
Nice.
You know, and I think it's got like I don't even know if it's a 1 gigahertz desktop processor inside of it and a 5-year-old copy of Winamp.
Nice.
You know, but the 17-inch glass, the 17-inch CRT I had it attached to it was on the corner of my lab bench, and it's how I played my music for forever. And it still runs. I mean, that's the funny thing about computer hardware, except for the hard drives. Almost everything inside of your computer, if you don't have a massive power hit that browns your system out or zaps it with a surge, computer hardware will run kind of forever. So, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, run it until you can't do something and then decide whether or not it's more equitable to upgrade individual parts or replace the entire thing. if you're sort of a competitive Twitch gamer and you don't play golf and you need to spend money somewhere, you know, you can buy a new graphics card every 6 months pretty easily.
It's amazing how much this depends on what your personal budget is and everything else. I mean, I know people that are upgrading their machines every 6 months, like you said. So it's as often as you feel like it should be. Right. Or when a game comes out, you can't play it, then you need to start looking. StarCraft 2, not that game. Lucky for you guys. next question comes from Chef Benito. Says, great review of the NVIDIA 465. I think he meant 460 from last week on Twitch. AMD GPUs and triple displays. Do the 5000 series actually scale with lots of anti-aliasing in DirectX 11, DirectX 10? The 5000 series actually scale with anti-aliasing at DX11. Yes, it does fairly well. The Radeon 5000 series, I don't have any of them sitting here with me, does do very well with anti-aliasing. In general, I would say if you're looking at a 5830 or 5850 or 5870, for most games, enabling anti-aliasing is almost like a free upgrade in image quality. They've engineered the memory subsystem and processing cores that... Or parts of the processing core that handle anti-aliasing optimized for that. You know, they basically can say you can get 4x anti-aliasing for free. And by free, we mean very little hit on your overall performance, but you get the benefits of 4x anti-aliasing. And then, I don't know if maybe we made a comment last week about NVIDIA's cards doing that, but the Radeon 5000 series not. But that definitely does work just fine on the 5000 series on DX11 and DX10 cards.
Good to know.
Yep.
Mystic duck. I know you've recommended a PCI Express USB 3.0 SATA 6 card before, but I can't remember what the name was. That would be the fabulous Asus model U3S6 USB 3.0 and SATA 6 gigabyte per second add-on card, currently selling for a whopping $24.99 at Asus. Has anything beaten the U3S6? Which is just a snappy name.
It's always very confusing, but I always have to remember it's like USB 3 SATA 6. Okay, and then I can get that in there. No, nothing has beat that. It's come down $5 in price. What's interesting is we saw when USB 3 and SATA 6 kind of all came out at the same time, more or less. Okay. We saw this big rush for motherboard manufacturers to integrate it in their product. What we haven't really seen any progression since then. We still are really on the same single Marvell SATA 6G controller and the same NEC USB 3.0 controller is still being used in all these different motherboards. And nothing has really changed in that time. So I don't know if the excitement died down. No other new controllers have been released. So the motherboard guys haven't had any reason to kind of release updated products and, you know, if anything is improving performance or not. But I mean, that card for $25, and I think it uses a by eight PCI Express slot, maybe a by four. I can't remember exactly, but I mean, it's a steal to integrate both those technologies in your system if you have or want to buy a USB 3.0 accessory or something like that. So
yeah, it does use a by four. By it basically, it'll fit in as small as a by four slot. It's a lot cheaper than buying a new motherboard.
Oh yeah, it's simpler. I mean, it's simpler, right? If you've got the space for it, you don't have to take everything out of your system and put a new motherboard in. And then if you have to reactivate Windows, usually when you change the motherboard out, and you know, you avoid all the room in your computer for the add-in card. So
it's a big plus. Follow-up question. Oops, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Should we point out whether or not USB 3.0 uses the same cables as USB 2.0?
It does not, technically. So, I mean, like, actually, well, this thing I've been playing with in my hand the whole time during the episode is a USB 3.0 thumb drive from SuperTalent. And it has, I mean, the connector is the same. It plugs in and it'll work in a USB 3 or USB 2.0 port, actually. In terms of cables, if you're going from an external hard drive to a computer, the part that connects to the external hard drive will be different. I don't have one with me to show you the differences, but it's very kind of, I don't know, rectangular shaped, but it's like, looks like two boxes stacked on top of each other, one bigger than the other. I think that they call that the USB 3.0A spec or something like that. But you'll be able to use any USB 2.0 devices on your USB 3.0 ports, and you should be able to use any You should be able to use most USB 3.0 devices on USB 2.0 ports, just running at the slower speed.
Got it.
So this will copy data at, you know, 160 megabytes per second if I have it plugged into a USB 3 slot, or 20 megabytes per second in a standard USB 2.0 slot.
That's a healthy difference.
Yes, very noticeable. Very noticeable if I'm copying, 10 gigs worth of video, raw video from a DSLR camera from one computer to the other. The transfer, when I can take it off of the computer that has USB 3 and move it to my laptop that does not. Very, very noticeable, healthy difference. Next question comes from Shield SS. Asks, best camcorder that can be used with Ustream, prefer SD card memory, any ideas? The only ideas I have here are to recommend. My problem with this is FireWire. FireWire seems to be the only way to really... In my experience, to have a camcorder just plug into a computer and show up to Skype, show up to Ustream, show up to anything, that it'll still show up kind of as a webcam. I mean, right now, technically, I'm doing that exact same thing. I'm using a Canon HV30 camcorder, two of them, one on each side, and they just FireWire out into this Mac, but it'll work plugged into a Windows machine as well. It just shows up as a webcam. I can go into Skype and select that camera in the options. The problem is this doesn't really match his settings because he wants SD card memory. These are tape-based So, ooh, legacy, you know, type storage devices there. I don't really, do you have any experience with any other camcorders that might use SD memory? And my problem is I don't think you can stream out through USB.
That's what I was going to say, is in most of the SD based camcorders I've seen don't support the pass through streaming. I got to say, one of the things people get really hung up, like, I need a 1080p HD camera because I'm going to be doing a web podcast, and it's you don't actually, because your video is going to be reduced in resolution and then it's going to be crunched because it's compressed. And while it may be really awesome for super cool guy producer or film student to have that 1080p video on archived on storage on, you know, several terabytes worth of drives so they can revisit their magnum opus later in life, most of the stuff that's being created for the web doesn't really need to be archived at 1080p. So if I was going to, you know, if you're not doing a mobile device, which is a very short list of kind of compatible mobile devices with Ustream, I'd start looking at some of the new 720p and actually some of the new Logitech net cams that just got entered, like 1080p cameras. Well, I just got one, it's claiming to do 1080p, and it's like, well, you've got all this power in your desktop. Why spend a lot of money on a video camera? Okay, you get better glass in the video camera. You could probably get better image processing in the video camera. Sure. And then again, you're going to turn around and you're going to crunch it to fit into YouTube Stream, which is developed so that it can be as affordable as possible for them to pump that out to the millions of people subscribing on Ustream. So, you know, not a particularly finite answer, but hopefully that'll kind of get you pointing in the right direction. Because it's just so easy to spend a lot of money on a camera that's going to deliver quality you're not going to see over H.264 Flash 9 video from the basic Ustream producer. And then it's like $200 for the Ustream producers Pro to actually get HD bitrate support. So if you want standard definition, great. You can use the free software from Ustream. If you want HD definition, you're going to be spending at least $200 on the front end to get the support you need from Ustream. Mm. So, yeah.
There you go. Maybe not the best answers, but hey, we've got them. We've got some kind of answer. The only other thing to say is it's hard. Somebody was pointing out in the chat room, I know this is true, it's really hard to find camcorders with FireWire ports anymore. FireWire is kind of going away in the consumer space. I think I actually had one of these HV30s and had to work pretty hard to find an HV30 like on eBay or something like that, just so I had two identical ones. But I agree with what Patrick's saying. For most people, you know, getting Logitech camcorders, even the new Microsoft cam, or not camcorders, webcams, USB-based webcams are going to be more than good enough. I mean, I think that's what most people on the Twit network are using for video, right? So,
yeah. You know, I'm using a Microsoft Life Cam at the 720p. You know, I'm doing a review of Logitech's new 1080p camera on the next episode of Techzilla. I think it's just, you know, if you want a portable camera, you're probably, that uses SD and an expensive portable camera, you're probably not going to be able to use it with Ustream. So, sorry. I'm trying to remember the Canon. Anyhow, keep going. I'm going to look around for something.
Okay. All right. We have one more Twitter question. Will come from Antland7. Asks Ryan, will ASUS be producing 1 gigabyte versions of their GTX 460s? As in the UK, I can't seem to find any yet. And even the 768 meg versions are scarce. I actually had a conversation with ASUS just this past week. Tuesday, so just a couple of days ago, actually, that their 1 gig versions were a little bit later out than they had wanted them to be. They released some, but they sold out really quick. Basically, what I'm hearing in terms of the market is the 1 gigs are selling like 4 to 1 compared to the 768 meg models, which makes sense to me because we talked about this last week. If you're going to spend $200, spend $225 and get the 1 gig model that. You're not just getting additional frame buffer, you're getting additional memory bus width and all this other kind of stuff. And it's a fairly significant performance boost between those two different versions. And you can take the 1 gig card, overclock it, and save money that way. And I think that's part of the reason why 1 gig cards are selling are harder to find, and I'm not sure what their production rates are. So if they're selling 4-to-1, if they're producing them 1-to-1, obviously the 1 gigs are going to be way harder to find than the 768 models. If you can, I would hold out personally for a 1 gig model still, rather than kind of settle and get a 768 if what you really want is the 1 gig. So they say they are making it. It's just a matter of getting enough of them out there. So good to hear, at least, hardware shortages. That means people are buying stuff, upgrading their computers, and playing PC games.
Good to know.
Yep. Now, you had another note here about a upcoming water cooling in a box versus expensive water cooling roundup.
Yes, you were challenging me to...
I did.
To talk to Corsair and get one of the new... basically, Corsair has a new system coming out, so I'm going to be waiting for that to come out, and then I will do the air cooling versus the next generation H50 water cooling in a box versus my ridiculous over the clock over the top car radiator and gigantic water block system. So I was actually laughing because I hadn't had a chance to use my big desktop system in a while, which is mm-hmm. is a recycled Blackbird case, and it's got the original Blackbird cooling system inside of it. And I forgot how loud that thing is when it's, because it's sitting on the kitchen table while I'm setting some stuff up in the house. And I was sitting there going like, gosh, that thing's loud. And it doesn't even have the giant, this isn't even the one with the giant, you know, car radiator on the side with the giant nice. Car radiator electric fan. So there's nothing more annoying than hearing your water cooling system, unless it's like 6 fans on your buddy's vintage case that he hasn't updated since he built it in the late 90s.
Now, I know recently on Techzilla, you had Lloyd Case on, and he was showing off a Puget System Serenity system.
Yeah.
Right? We had one of those here in-house that we just finished our testing on. And you want to talk about a quiet computer. I mean, it's rated sub 20 decibels. The quietest I could get our office was like 29 decibels.
And what were you using to measure that? Because it's usually costs a lot of money to even get a decibel meter that'll measure like 40. You know, you can go to Radio Shack and pick up a decibel meter that's pretty good to like the 40s, you know, low 50s.
This is kind of like it's like a scientific brand. It's an X-Tech model. Mm-hmm. I think I probably paid $400 or $500 for it. You know, it was fairly expensive, and it goes down to 20. So, I mean, that's its lowest range. And the lowest I could get turning off the air conditioning, turning off the lights, turning off the monitors was like 29 decibels in the office. Yeah. And I was like, well, like I turn on the system and we loop 3D Mark Vantage for, you know, an hour, 2 hours, and come back and it's not reading any higher than ambient. So that's a good thing. Right. So
no, it's, they did a really nice job. They started out with, there's Antec
P183.
Yeah, they started with an Antec P183, which is a really quiet case to begin with. It's essentially a double wall case. It's a really smooth design. They've got, you know, rubber isolating most of the metal parts to help minimize the transmission of vibration inside the case. Then they lay out, they basically custom cut damping insulation, which is kind of like Dynamat for your car. And they do some pretty solid component selection to try to minimize the amount of noise. It is a ridiculously quiet system.
we'll talk about it more here and maybe next week's episode once I get that video up as well. But I know Techzilla, which is where you host that show, also did an article on, I think it wasn't this past episode, it was the one before, I think.
Yeah, right, it should still be up on the Techzilla.com homepage. You should be able to see it up on there. Yeah, it's always fun having Lloyd Case on because he's so thorough in his testing.
Yeah,
really good. And yeah, that's the you know, we talked about like DIY versus buying something like the Serenity from Puget Systems. It's amazing how quiet you can get a PC these days. My favorite part is also not being able to hear the hard drives, which is nice because of the bearing designs have changed so much in the last 10 years on the hard drives. Then it's basically down to isolating the head noise, and it's gotten a lot easier to do that.
Or you can buy an SSD. Just,
not to store several terabytes of video. Not just yet.
Oh, so you're on a budget. Okay, I got it. All right, I can handle that.
It's my $9,000 PC, $8,000 in SSDs, and $1,000 for the rest of the hardware.
hey, you got to do what you got to do to make it quiet, right? It was just, yeah, we'll talk about that in an upcoming episode. So as we round out this week's show, other than techzilla.com, where else can we find you, Patrick?
Well, here at Twitch, obviously, every Thursday, and HDNation.tv. We have a new episode that comes out, I want to say, every Monday. I do that with Robert Heron. It's basically all about high-definition content and home theater gear. And we had a lot of fun this week. The Pop Box, mm-hmm. which was really interesting. Panasonic's VT25, which may be Robert Heron's new favorite HDTV, and Ooh. Has closest blacks to the Kuro, the long lost Kuro, which has the blackest blacks ever found on an HDTV, yep. and quite a bit more in this week's show that comes out on Monday.
Well, I will be checking that out for sure. If you want to find me, you can find on other than this show, like Patrick mentions, every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. You can also find our reviews and editorial content at PC Perspective, PCPer.com. So that's going to wrap it up this week. Don't forget our contest. Send an email to me, ryan@twit.tv. Just say in there you want a copy of Just Cause 2, and you will be entered in for the random raffle courtesy of random.org. So that will do it for this week. For This Week in Computer Hardware, I'm Ryan. And that's Patrick.
And we'll see you Sorry, next another week. Delay there.
That's all right.
And I'm mute. We'll see you next week.